listener.
Kickbump acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Yolukut Wulam clan of the Boonwurrung, who are part of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respect to their elders, past and present, and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. Welcome to the Kickbump Podcast, your fortnightly D&M on all things motherhood. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hi guys, I'm so excited to be chatting to you today. We have a very exciting weekend ahead of us for ourselves, if you're a mum listening or a mum-to-be, or maybe you've got a mum in your life, because Mother's Day is coming up, which is super special, and I hope you guys get to have some time for yourself if you're a mum or a mum-to-be or with your mum. And if you can't see your mum for any reason, I'm also sending you love, because I know it can also be a hard day for those who don't. So for me, I am going to make sure I make time for my mum. I'm actually going to the theatre with mum. It's a surprise I had for her and my gorgeous auntie, which I'm super excited about. And then other than that, I don't really have any plans. So I'm excited to see what Harvey and Josh hopefully plan for me, but I'll give you an update at a later date to see what happens. Harvey's also just turned 3, which is insane to me. I cannot believe he is already a 3-year-old. And you know what? It's true what they say. Terrible twos is not, I hate that term anyway, but it is so not the hardest part. I feel like the closer he got to 3, the more kind of stubborn and challenging he has gotten. However, the more fun I'm also having with him, because his conversations, like his vocabulary, is just, as you guys know, I'm so proud every time I talk to you guys, I feel like I have an update of what he's saying. It is just growing, growing. And I wanted to share one little thing he said to me the other day, because I literally put it in my notes because I thought it was the cutest thing ever. He said, "Oh my goodness, golly goshington." And I melted in that moment, because he's just got such a funny way of expressing himself when he's in a good mood. And I'm loving it. So 3, it's challenging, but it's also so nice to be able to finally have conversations and just for him to like tell me how he's feeling and everything. There's a lot of learning going on, which is why today's episode was so helpful to me. And I know it's going to be so helpful to a lot of you as well. I had the incredible Jess Sanders on, who is actually the daughter of Janine Sanders, who I've had on a couple of times before. And we recently had on for grooming, the grooming episode that we did. So this is Jess, her daughter. She's a children's author and social worker, and she's the author of the series Life Lessons for Little Ones, which teaches children about important lessons from listening to your body to embracing vulnerability. And the fourth and latest book she's done is You Can Do Hard Things, A Little One's Guide for Not Giving Up. So we spoke today about growth mindsets, how parents can be a model for growth mindset for children, letting kids experience failure, fixing your child's emotions or not fixing your child's emotions, and how you can kind of help your child build confidence in themselves and not be afraid of that failure. So I really enjoyed my chat with Jess, and I got a lot out of it personally. And before we get into the chat, I do have a very special kick update for you guys. We have a code that you can either use for yourself, or you can share it with a mum in your life so that you can treat your mum this Mother's Day to a free month of Kick. So the code will be in the show notes. It's 1 month for mum. Whether you're a new mum or a soon-to-be mum, or all you want in life to be is a mum, no matter what kind of mum you are, we are here to make time for you. So you can find that code in our show notes. As I said, the link is there as well. You just have to sign up to our monthly subscription via our website, and the code will be valid until Wednesday, the 15th of May. So I hope you guys enjoy that. I hope you guys enjoy making time for either yourself or the mum in your life this Mother's Day. And I hope you enjoy my episode with Jess. Jess, welcome to the Kickbump Potty.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here.
It's so lovely to be chatting to you. And like, as soon as you sat down and I could see you on the screen, I was like, well, it's obvious who your mum is. You're very similar.
I know. Yeah. I find that as the years go on, I look more and more like her and I sound more and more like her, which is not a bad thing at all. She's pretty awesome, as your listeners may have heard when she was on recently.
Oh, I mean, even just like being in her presence, I think I cried to her last time she was here. off the mic, I was like opening up about some stuff I'm going through with Harvey at the moment, and she was just, oh, so sweet. She was like, if you want to reach out. I think I cried. Anyway, but she's just got that really warm, nurturing feel, which I love. So whenever I'm in her presence, I'm like, gosh, your girl's lucky to have you as a mum. But it's funny what you say about like morphing almost into your mum as you get older, because I can definitely relate to that. And I think I'm still very much I wouldn't say naughty, but I'm like a bit of a rascal. And I think growing up I was too. And my dad was that way inclined. So like, I think I always related more to my dad growing up, and my mum was always like very well behaved and kind of pulled our heads in and stuff. And, very, very sweet. And I was like, oh, you just don't get me. I mean, I always loved her, always got along. Like, we always had a beautiful relationship, but I just like didn't really get it. And then as soon as I became an adult, and then especially as soon as I became a mum, I was like, far out, you're the best mum in the world. I want to be everything like you. And I think I am also talking and looking more and more like her as I get older. And I think that's so special.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing. And it also demonstrates probably what we'll be talking about today, that like if you model you know, beautiful values, and, you know, you emulate that compassion, speak to yourself kindly, that you like, yeah, kids become what you do and say rather than how you tell them to be. Like, they model themselves off of you. And so, yeah, if you just lead by example, you can be pretty confident that you'll raise some beautiful kids, I think.
100%. And it's so funny because they literally will do anything but what you tell them to do. So yeah. It's really the only way to get them to do anything. It's so true. Now, you might be able to see on the camera, I've got your book here in front of me, and I've got a bit of a funny story because I've flicked through it before, but I always like to have something fresh in my mind before going into these kind of potties. So I went to read it this morning just with my coffee while Harvey was having his porridge. And he saw it in my hands and cracked it and was like, that's mine. And he didn't sleep very well last night, so we woke up on the wrong side of the bed. And he just went to grab it off me, and I was like, oh, Harvey, I really want to read the book. Like, do you mind if I borrow it? Can we share? And he was just absolutely refusing, said, put it back on my bookshelf. Like, he was in a mood this morning. So I was sitting there like, but I really actually really like kind of need to and want to read it, Harvey, please. And I tried to get him all excited. Like, I was like, the author, person who wrote this book, I'm getting to chat to her today. And he just didn't care. He was like, that's my book. Nah. Put it back on my bookshelf. So then while he was like watching Trolls and distracted, I snuck back up to his room and like had to put it under my shirt and sneak it back downstairs, because if he'd seen that before we left, he would have cracked it
wow.
even more. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
gosh,
what I'm dealing with.
I do not envy you. I'm not a parent, but I've been following along with your Harvey updates, and I'm like, you are in it. Like, I think in the sounds like the worst of it. Everyone talks about like those terrible twos, and they're just like defiance is just the baseline, and that is so challenging. So you're doing amazing.
Yeah. Thanks. Well,
hat
thanks.
Off to you.
Yeah, thanks. And it's funny because like terrible twos, like the closer they get to three, I feel like the harder it's getting. But I will say what we're chatting about today, and as you said, like leading by example is certainly something that has helped us through some of those tough times, rather than trying to go the old school way, I suppose, of parenting and like telling them what to do and trying to be disciplined and all that sort of stuff. Like, that has absolutely not worked at all in my household anyway. So I'm really excited to talk to you though today specifically around growth mindset. And I love this topic because I was really fortunate in my household growing up. Like, my parents really encouraged my brother and I to get into different sports or different arts, whatever we kind of were interested in and wanted to do, obviously if it was within means. They were really supportive of us giving things a crack. And even if it meant I did a term of ballet, whilst it was probably very annoying going through the enrollment of that sort of thing and then redirecting, they were very like open to us trying things and just having a really, like, I suppose growth mindset of like where we could go in life. And even later in life when I wanted to become a model, like that's not every parent's dream to hear that from their kids. In fact, it's a lot of people's like it's what the last thing they want to hear just because of fear of the industry and what could happen and all that sort of stuff. But for my parents, I think they'd always seen that interest in me, and it was kind of a no-brainer. And so, I mean, they had a few suggestions, you know, for things on the side, but other than that, they were okay with me giving it a go. And I think it's because I did grow up in that, I suppose, environment of like trying things, not being afraid to fail, thinking big and like dreaming big. Like I was like, no, I'm going to be a model. It's going to be, I'm going to be a famous model and it's going to work out for me. And then even though everyone told me it wasn't and that I needed to doing something else, I was like, but this is what I really want to do. And so I did it. And so that's kind of what I want to talk to you about today, because I would love to kind of emulate the same sort of thing, that sort of thing for Harvey as well. But I suppose let's start with just the definition of growth mindset. How do you personally define it?
Yeah, so growth mindset is actually like terminology that was coined by Dr. Carol Dweck. So she's a professor of psychology at Stanford Uni, and this is kind of her theory. And she has the term growth mindset, but on the other side of that spectrum is a fixed mindset. So she would say a fixed mindset is, you know, being like, I can't, for example, I'm bad at maths. And that is the belief. I'm bad at maths. And because you believe you're bad at maths, you never try to get better at maths. And consequently, you stay bad at maths. But if you had a growth mindset, you'd be like, okay, I can't do my times tables yet, but with practice and perseverance, I will be able to. And you can see how like that would be so important for kids, because it either instantly closes a door or opens one. And so what you were talking about and like finding your path and following your interest and your nose to kind of reach your full potential, become your true self. If you have that fixed mindset and if you have, you know, your internal narrative is I can't do things, I'm not good at stuff, you consequently sort of stay fixed in where you are. And I do think like most things, but mindsets aren't binary. So I think we go on that spectrum up and down a little bit depending on what's going on and maybe in different areas of our lives. But I think as a general rule, it's a great way to think about, yeah, our mindset and what's possible, and particularly a really important thing to nurture in our kids.
So what about like what age do you start encouraging this? Because I think like I'm always been really active and adventurous. I think more so as a kid. As soon as I became an adult, I started to understand risks and get a little bit nervous about things. And now I totally understand why Mum was in the back of the boat instead of next to me on an e-board growing up. because I get it now. But I would love Harvey to be adventurous and want to try things, but also understand risk. What age do you start encouraging that kind of growth mindset where, yeah, give it a go? Because I'm imagining like him maybe when he was even a little bit younger, some of the things he wanted to do on the playground. And I was like, well, I don't know about this one, buddy. Like maybe come down, maybe you can't do that. When does it start and kind of like how do you navigate that as they're in their young age?
Yeah. That's a good question, because I think it's like we as the adults understand the risk, the permanency of what's going to happen, and like there needs to be enough room for them to fall down sometimes, to make mistakes and to learn those boundaries. But then I saw a picture of my friend the other day trying to stop their kid from going down the slide on their bike. And so like that's a good example of I think we know how that's going to end.
Yeah,
it's not going to be good. And so we do have to say, no, you're not going to try that thing. I actually know how that's going to end up. And then if I think it's just about redirecting and providing choice in another avenue, being like, all right, we could go down the slide together, or you could do this and then we could go ride your bike over here. But like, obviously it's our job to protect them and keep them particularly physically safe. But I think like in terms of what age to start, it's really as soon as they're receiving feedback. So you're crawling around trying to walk, for example, and it's like you would have naturally done this with Harvey, and most parents would naturally be saying, yeah, that's an amazing, you've got up, you've done it, you're nearly there. And you'll be praising the process often rather than the outcome. Like it takes a long time for them to learn to walk, but you're encouraging them in that process and along the way in that learning process. So it can start kind of, as early as they can receive that feedback, but obviously everything needs to be like age appropriate and expectations realistic on their developmental stage.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it's like even with, you know, not the playground, let's call it like a building block situation in the playroom. Harvey, you know, can get really upset if he's building a tower and he's trying to get it taller and taller, and then there's always a height that it just can't, he can't get past, and it'll crash every time, and he's just disappointed. And sometimes he puts on a bit of a cry, and, you know, it takes some encouragement for him to try it again and everything. Why is it important that they do kind of see these barriers or these like almost failures in a way? Why is it important that they experience that along the way as well, other than, you know, encouraging them to give things a crack and then them seeing that they can actually do it? Like, again, I'll go back to the playground. There's this little obstacle course on the playground near our house, and he's done it before. And the other day he went to do it and his foot slipped a little bit and he was like, can't do it, can't do it. I was like, buddy, you did it last week. Like, give it another go. You can try it. And then he did it. And the face, like, of how proud he was is just the best thing in the entire world. But what about failing? What about the days where they just can't do it? Maybe they haven't done it before, or it's not possible, or they have done it before, but today is just not their day. Like, why is that important?
Yeah. I think, like, you know, failure is a part of life. Being disappointed is a big part of life, you know, and I think how we teach them to hold space for that disappointment or that sadness or frustration and move through it and then continue to persevere is then how they will relate to failure as adults. And like, perfectionism is just like the fear of failure and feeling that, like, if you fail, you will not be able to survive. And so it can keep you so restricted. So we want to actually teach them that you can fail. I'm still here. I still love you. You're safe. You can come through the other side. And then you can, as you reminded him, like, you can do it. These are times where you've done hard things, where you've overcome that barrier and you've achieved it. But an important step not to be missed when that disappointment is there or that sadness is to just hold a bit of space and sit with that feeling. I think a lot of us were not taught to sit with discomfort, to sit with harder feelings, and it needs to have its time, and generally it won't last very long. Like with kids, you know, I talk about emotions being like the weather. A big emotion comes, it's, whoa, we're feeling it. It's very outward, particularly amongst toddlers, and then it passes through, and then we're on to the next block or activity. But if they're in the midst of that emotion and we're like, come on, come on, get over it, you know, it's not going to go well. And we're also not teaching them to feel through. We're teaching them to avoid feelings, which can be kind of the opposite of resilience. Resilience comes from feeling your feelings and feeling through them and moving on. Like, does that answer the question?
Absolutely. It's so interesting because I have to catch myself at times where, you know, maybe he is overreacting. Well, in my mind, obviously, as a sane adult, like, overreacting to something that's happened. And whether I'm like, for some reason, in a bit of a rush for something or whatever, my mind's somewhere else and not super present with him, I'll instinctively just want to go, it's all right, it's okay, don't worry about it, like, and try and move him on. And you're right, when I do that, it's like he looks at me like, are you kidding me? Like, the world is ending. Yeah. Like, what do you mean? It's all right. And I've noticed a huge difference when you just shift your body language, or even like what you verbally say, if you're not just going to sit there and kind of let them cry. I've noticed, like, saying things like, oh, that's so frustrating when the tower just keeps falling, like, or just speaking through that. And like, as soon as you relate that, his eyes just like instantly connect to mine. And it's like, right, okay, cool. So we can try and do something. And it's really interesting because I think it must be just a generational shift as well. And I mean, I'm lucky. I think I had a bit of both, you know. I think I had a bit of that, oh, come on, like, you know, let's move on, only because that's what parenting was for our generation, I think, for a lot of us. But I think I also did have that empathy from both my parents. They, like, you know, made me feel like, oh, that really sucks at the same time. And it is just flipping it. It's like putting yourself in their position. Sometimes in the moment, it's really hard to, because it could be as something as simple as like blocks falling over. But then I think about it, I'm like, okay, if I was walking in the kitchen and I dropped like my favorite bowl and it broke, I'd probably want to like cry and like be really upset about that. And I just try and, but this is how he's feeling. That's how he's feeling right now. And if Josh was like, don't worry about it, like, let's just clean it up, move on, I'd be like, excuse me.
It's quite funny. I know, because like, most of the time we don't want someone to fix our emotions. We want someone to recognize them and see them and sit with us in them. Like, and that's what kids want too. And it's like so frustrating when we come back to our partners and we're like, oh, this happened, I had like the worst day ever. And they're like, oh, well, tomorrow will be a better day. And, or maybe you could do this differently. And you're like, no. Like, listen to me. I just want you to say that sucks. And kids are exactly the same. And as you say, it's perspective. To us, it's blocks. We know you can pile the blocks up again.
Yeah.
But to them, it's a big deal. And it must be so hard. Like, I really empathize with parents. I'm not a parent. And that, like, just when you're trying to do life and life is so busy, to like constantly be holding space and presence, it's pretty much impossible, I think, to do that consistently.
Yeah.
But I think you'll probably find, as you say, that it is more time efficient in the long run to do it as well, because you move them through it and you can get on with the day and what needs to be done.
It's so true. Okay, this one is kind of a big one, but it's going to round it out for me, I think, because this makes me think of those who end up on things like Australian Idol who, look, art is a subjective thing of what is good and what is not. But when it comes to singing, I do feel like some people are encouraged that they are something that they may not be. Or at least a talent that, sure, yep, you enjoy it. And if you enjoy it, go do it. I'm not the best singer, but I love singing. And anyone who tells me to stop when I'm around them, I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep going. But I'm not going to go for Australian Idol. Like, I've got I've got enough knowledge to know that I'm not there. But when I see that, it makes me think of, I suppose, the extreme end of growth mindset of that saying, like, you can do anything. You can do anything you put your mind to. Like, realistically, and I love that kind of encouragement, because really it is our mind that blocks us from so many things that we can physically or like emotionally get through. Absolutely. But it's our mind that's like puts those barriers up. So I do love it in that sense. But how do you balance, like, you can do anything with like, but not anything actually, because that's actually not possible. Or,
yeah, I mean, such a good question. Yeah, no, it's really important to speak to. And I think, like, with all my books and this one in particular, I think it's important to speak to the other side of things, to not be like kind of toxically positive or set kids up with unrealistic expectations. And like, for kids with disabilities or like different, you know, on the spectrum, there may be things that are not possible for their bodies or brains. And to set them up saying you can just do it if you try is kind of really invalidating and unhelpful. And as you say, it's like, you're not going to say to a kid that is very short, from a very short family, you're going to be a basketball star if you want to be, if you just work hard enough, because that's just not real life. And so I think it's a balance between being like, you know, making sure our biases don't get in the way as well. Like, for example, with your modeling example, I was thinking about, you know, kids who are in bigger bodies or kids with a disability being like, oh, you don't look like a stereotypical model, so you can't pursue modeling. But like, actually, that whole world has opened up for diverse bodies and people, and that is possible. So there's that fine line between not letting our biases limit, and particularly in the area of disability, I think we do come with this sort of limited mindset sometimes with kids and believe that they're less capable than they are. So it's important to be aware of that, whilst at the same time holding that there are just some things that aren't possible, and that's okay. And I actually say that in the book, and I think it's important to hold space for that, because I think our generation in particular were very much like the you can be anything kids.
Yeah.
And then definitely. And then you realize that you're not that special, actually. And do you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, you don't want a false sense of self either. And doing hard things and showing yourself that you can do them when you try, all those things build like a really healthy sense of confidence and self. Like, an example is, like, I have to learn my own lessons from my own books. Like, that's why I write them. It's part of my,
I wanted to ask
part
you about
of
that.
My therapy, you know, like, and for example, I have anything kind of handy to do with house maintenance, like, I have avoided, and I have my dad just do it. I'm not going to even try to do it for me. And now I live in Tasmania without my dad around, and I own a home and I'm having to renovate it. And like, last weekend I had to, and like last week, I'm like, I can't afford to get anyone to fix my windowsills that are rotting. I have to do it. And I had about 10 tantrums like over a weekend. But I did it, and I was like so incredibly proud of myself, and just watching the ripple effect of that for my confidence throughout the week, my confidence thinking about other things I need to do to my house. Like, it really just showed me the power of that. And for kids, as you say, when Harvey did the thing that he wanted to do, like the blocks or whatever it was, how good that made him feel and how confident. And like, the one thing, my mum would always say this, actually, the one thing we can't give our kids is confidence. Like, they have to find it for themselves. But we can give them those tools to grow confidence, I think.
Oh my God, I love that. That is, that's such good advice. And I did want to ask you a little bit about yourself, because I can imagine with, I mean, it's a little bit like Kick, right? With a lot of the messages that we put out and encouragements about around body image and your relationship with food and exercise and stuff, like it's a constant journey. Like we're all human. Neither Laura or I have got to that like end destination where like we wake up every day and are like incredibly happy with who we are and are so sure of every decision we make in life. And, you know, it's a constant journey, and a lot of the time what we are projecting out is also what we need to hear for ourselves. Yep. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I'd love you to touch on that, because I imagine writing, which congratulations, so amazing that you're a children's book author. It's actually something I wanted to do when I was little, so I love meeting children's book authors. I like, it's such an achievement and such a cool thing to go through. But I think having things like this, especially as you said, like you don't have children yourself, but like obviously you're so passionate about making a difference. I would just love to know a little bit of background as to like why you've written the books that you have.
Yeah. And I actually think, I was thinking about this morning, that my books are a great example of a growth mindset. So I wasn't a particularly talented writer. I am terrible at spelling. but I felt very passionately with my first book. I really wanted, like, I struggled with my body image growing up as well. And I'm 6 foot, and I was 6 foot when I was about 12. So I've always been the tallest in every classroom. I really, really struggled. And when I got older and I went to uni and I learned about gender and I kind of tried to unlearn all these harmful beliefs that I had about bodies and myself, and I just tried to reshape my relationship with my body, and I did. And then I was like, why did I have to go through all of that? And why does every girl and woman I know have to go through the same thing? And I've had access to therapy to unlearn all this stuff and higher education. And I'm like, well, is there a book out there that teaches girls that, like, you know, about what is normal, that shows them cellulite and stretch marks and different bodies? Because I didn't have it and I really wish I had. And I went to all these bookstores in Melbourne and it didn't exist at the time. So I was like, okay, maybe I should. I think my best friend actually was like, why don't you do it? And I was like, well, I've never written a book and I'm not much of a writer. And then I was like, you know what? If not me, who? I'm just going to give it a crack. and luckily I have a children's book author for a mother. So I was like, how do you do it?
Yes, where
and
do
asked
I
some
begin?
Questions. Yeah. I literally was like, and she gave me the best advice as per usual. But she said, just imagine there's a little girl in front of you. Like, what would you want to say to them? So all my books are written in that affirmational way, and it's my voice speaking directly to a child. And it's really is like the greatest honor of my life that I get to be in, you know, like at story time with parents and their kids or in classrooms sharing like what I think is a really important and true message that, again, yeah, is healing for myself. So for example, like the first book in the Life Lessons for Little Ones series is called You Are Enough. And that is something I think I struggle with, we all struggle with, right? Like that sense of feeling worthy, feeling enough. And so I have so many adults message me saying, I'm crying about this book because like I needed to hear that. And I thought, how beautiful to be healing at the same time as sharing that message with your little ones. Like, and I think that even is intrinsically healing. So, yeah, that's kind of how it came about. And I just love that it can be my therapy, but also other adults' therapy.
Well, what special bookshelves the children in your life, be it your own or your sister's, like, will have with the books that you guys have written. They're so incredible. And I can totally relate to feeling that way when you're reading certain things to your children and then it's like hitting you like, wow, I really needed to read that today. Yeah. and there's a lot of that in your books. We'll make sure that there's links to them in the show notes. Just thank you so much. I think it's awesome what you're doing, and like to make a change in hopefully how people do perceive themselves and what they can do in life and everything. It's important that it happens in those really informative years from a young age. So it's really incredible what you're doing, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Oh, thanks so much, Steph. Thanks for having me. It's been so lovely.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you would like to get involved with the Kick Pod or Kick Bump Pod, you can by going to our Instagram at Kick Pod and sending us a voice note or writing in a DM. And if you would like to join a bit of a virtual mothers group, we like to call it, our Kick Bump Facebook community is for you. There is so much in there, encouragements of finding your journey again after having a baby or questions during pregnancy. It's a virtual mother's group of love and support, and you are so welcome. So you can find us there. If you would like to learn more about Kik, you can go to our website, kikapp.com, or you can find us on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, where we have a 7-day free trial. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back in your ears very soon. Bye.